fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get three-pound packs of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $2.99 a pound with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Guys, welcome to the Everyday Warrior Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Cirelli. We've got a great guest today, Gwendolyn Bounds, who goes by Wendy, but I want to get the full name because that's what's on the title of her new book, Not Too Late, The Power of, and Wendy, help me out here.
Pushing Limits at Any Age, something you know about.
Yeah, something I'm struggling with. I think everyone's struggling with it, not as much as you, hence why you wrote the book. And I think we all need to push from time to time in a different perspective on how to, let's say, deal with the silent dilemmas that we're dealing with within our heads. And we all know the mind is the most powerful tool. It can also be your greatest enemy. But Wendy, before we get into it, you've had a storied career, award-winning writer. You've worked with Consumer Reports. Is it CBS?
I'll give you the quick TLDR on that. I was at the Wall Street Journal for about 20 years as a writer and an editor, and really cut my teeth in journalism at that place, and moved over, you're right, Mike, to Consumer Reports and ran their media for a while. I've done some on-air work at CNBC, ABC News, MSNBC as a contributor, and now I work at a media startup called Smart News, which is basically a news aggregator. So interesting move from traditional media to tech, which was a pivot in its own right and required a head mindset shift for me. But we can get into that a little bit later.
And, you know, everyone I meet from the Wall Street Journal, it is like a factory of high-performing leaders. I mean, Wall Street Journal there's a reason I still read the Wall Street Journal, because their bar is so much higher than every other news outlet. I mean,
it is extraordinary.
Even when they get it wrong, it's at a higher level.
It is very high. I mean, look, I started there right out of college. It was sink or swim, but in a good way, right? I mean, you learned to get things right. There was a floating around in the ether when I first joined was this notion that if you had three mistakes within your career, that was it. You'd be out. Like, that teaches you pretty quick not to make mistakes. But I think I worked with some of the most talented writers, thinkers, leaders, and editors. And I'm lucky. I mean, that was kind of my boot camp in journalism.
Well, let me ask you this. You studied within the Ivy League of news. Was there a mentor in particular that you credit a lot of your, development to within Wall Street Journal?
There are a few. I mean, they ranged from a very storied managing editor named Paul Steiger, who is a legend in journalism. Anybody who Googles Paul Steiger will find out he helped lead us through the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks here, when we basically our office was shut down by the trade. We were right next to the Trade Center Tower. So we managed to put out a paper on September 12th, thanks in large part to him and a lot of other leaders. And there's a woman named Joanne Littman, who's written a lot about reinvention. She wrote a great book called Next. She was a mentor to me, both of them for similar and differing reasons. But I credit who I am today to the two of them.
Now, before we get to your new book, Not Too Late, you did write one around September 11th called The Little Chapel on the River, A Pub in Town, In the Search for What Matters Most. Just give us, and maybe it's another book the audience can go purchase, give us a sense of what that book was about.
I think in a nutshell, Mike, it's a love story about a place. It opens on September 11th, 2001, when I'm in the shower when the first plane hits the World Trade Center Tower, and unfolds from there where, I'm unable to go back to my home next to the World Trade Center Tower, and I end up in the Hudson River Valley of New York, and essentially fall into the metaphorical arms of this Irish pub and country store in the Hudson Valley. And then I ended up becoming very close to the family who was struggling to save it. And it's a story about all of the people who came in and out of there and what a third place like that, a place that's not home, not work, can mean to us and what community can be like. And I went to work at the pub and the store for a while, and that's part of the book.
I love how you talk about third place. I think a lot of people are missing this component in their life. It's work, it's home. That third place may be church, it may be a pub, it may be some sort of community or you know, group that you belong to. So I'm going to assume that it was cathartic, it was healing for you in the wake of 9/11.
I don't know what would have happened to me had I not really ended up there. I mean, from something so bad, something incredibly like another family, right, was made in this place. And I know you understand this from your work being a Navy SEAL, like what a family that's not your blood can be like. Those people became like that to me. Yep. And it's interesting just talking about third places. I mean, in some ways, my next book is about community and a third place within the realm of sport, right? Which is something I never knew. You know, I was a very skinny, gangly, last pick for teams kid growing up. And I never had that camaraderie that I think you find when you engage with a team of people in doing something. And I know you've known that for a long time, but I did find it within that pub in my first book, and I have found it within the community of obstacle course racing in my second book. So it's interesting you're saying that, because I'm making that tie in my head now.
So I want to jump into the book because this is powerful. I know you and I see it even amongst friends. Not too late. Never too late. Never too late to try new things. I don't care if you're in your 40s and you've always wanted to play guitar. It doesn't matter what it is. But I think society as a whole places this stigma that as you get older, you're capable of less things. Let's just call it for what it is. So this book, and I know, guys, I've asked Wendy to focus on three core messages, which are hacks don't cut it, which we at the Everyday Warrior talk about, a no-hack practical approach to life, the competency track, and then the cycle of sameness. That's S-A-M-E-N-E-S, sameness, not sameness. But there's a great story that led you at a dinner party to pursue this track, or at least got within your head what you wrestled with. If you could tell that story and how this came about, and then we'll get to these core messages.
Sure. You know, as you said, I was at a dinner party. I was 45 at the time, and I overheard a man who was well into his gin at that point in time ask a little girl, he said, you know, to her, what do you want to be when you grow up? And she just started rattling off all these incredible things, Mike, you know, artist and veterinarian, musician, like computer programmer. And I think he regretted that he asked because she went on for so long. But that conversation stuck with me. And the whole evening, the what do you want to be when you grow up refrain just kept like pinging in my head. And it occurred to me that, you know, when you hit midlife, nobody's asking you that anymore. And even more important, you're not asking yourself. You're not asking yourself anymore, what do I want to be? And I think it's in part because we get trapped in what you alluded to a moment ago in this cycle of sameness, the same work routines, the same friends, the same house chores, the same conversations, the same restaurants, and it loops and we get in this pattern of inertia. And then the voices in society start telling us, you know what, new things are for when you're younger. You're too old to push limits, right? This is the time when you're supposed to just be leaning into what you're good at and shying away from what you're not. And we get frozen by that. And I think I know from the research I did for the book that this is not good for us, both for our mental and emotional health and also for our physical health in many ways. And so in my book, I make the case through my own story and also through the very smart people that I interviewed for it, why, you know, pushing yourself and engaging in a passion that you want to go to sleep earlier, you know, turn off Netflix, like stop scrolling on social media, something you care enough about to go down the long road of trying to master it, how powerful this can be in terms of our overall well-being and actually, Mike, our longevity.
You know, as you're talking, this reminds me of a story. We interviewed, Tracy Keough, who is the CHRO of Hewlett Packard. She's the one that went out and sat with Meg Whitman, convinced the board to bring her on. She said the most powerful people, and age had no matter in it, had this inner child. And what she said was that this curiosity, that this excitement at can things be better? Can we do this? Can we push the bounds? And she said, you never want to lose that inner child. And I think we do that naturally because, again, stigmas of, oh, you're now a father or you're now a mother and, you know, you've got to sacrifice for your children, which is true, but it doesn't mean you stop living as well. The best example I believe you can set for your children is by maintaining that inner child and that curiosity and trying new things, if possible, with them. But the cycle of sameness, we all end up there at some point in our life. In the book, do you talk about any steps towards breaking that?
Yeah. First of all, I love what you said about children. You find children in general gravitate to adults who don't lose their inner child, right? They recognize something in them, that curiosity, and they're attracted to that. So I couldn't agree with you more on that point. I think, you know, for people who are questioning, like, how do I get out of, you know, this cycle myself, right? They're saying, I don't want the file that's labeled me to be a locked one. Like, how do I break out of this? I think one of the things first is to focus on, and I know you know a lot about this, intrinsic motivation versus extrinsic motivation. So something that, again, is so deeply rooted that you're passionate about intrinsically, that it's going to make you get up in the rain and go do it, right? Even if you're tired, you're going to not skip the little details and the routines that are necessary to pursue this journey, versus extrinsic motivations, which is something like money or a finisher medal in a race. Like, those things are fleeting. They come and go. But when push comes to shove in the hardest of moments, and certainly don't have to tell you this because you know from your long career, it is intrinsic motivation that is what gets you over the line. So I think that that, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on that in 1 minute, but I want to nail two other things, which is, one, I think people put up barriers to entry and they need to not do it. They think, I'm going to start something new. I need to have all the perfect equipment, all the best gear, download every app, watch every video. And you just need to get out there and start doing. And by doing and fumbling around, that's actually going to make you take the first steps and stop procrastinating. And eventually that fumbling will give way to process. It did for me. And the last thing I want to say, and this is counterintuitive when you get older, but, you know, be okay looking foolish, right? We get older and we think, oh, I've got to have my hand on the master control switch, right? I'm the wise one. No. I mean, Mike, I cannot tell you how ridiculous I looked in the beginning, crawling around in my backyard, trying to learn what a bear crawl was in the frozen ground and going to gyms with people who were 10, 20, 25 years younger than I am, but I stuck with it. And that being okay looking foolish eventually was what gave me permission to get better. So those are three things, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, the be okay looking foolish, if you've ever seen me skydive, and I continue to do it, it's pretty foolish looking. Not the best skydiver, but I don't care. You know, when you and I talked about the 777, which I'm wildly proud to have done, and it's consumed 3 years of our lives. But at the very end, when we made that record setting jump that set 4 world records in Perth, there was a group that had followed us. So we had about 50 people at the drop zone to watch us do it that just showed up. And one of them said, well, you must just be over the moon that you just set 4 world records. And I sort of gave the shoulder shrug that, yeah, that's cool, but they're meaningless.
Right.
It was the journey. And then I pointed over at the guys who were now drinking a beer, which they hadn't slept for like 7 days. So they were quick drunks. And I said, that's the reason we did it. And it was that intrinsic motivation of taking on a challenge with a team that people said couldn't be done. And that's what it was about. And then one of the guys, I swear to God, 5 minutes later said, so what's next? What are we doing next? What's the next challenge? But the barriers to entry, it's almost like entrepreneurs. I think there's some statistics out there that only 4 out of 10 business plans actually make it to execution, because people stay in that sort of paralysis through analysis and continually make excuses that, well, this isn't ready, this isn't ready, this is too big of a barrier, and they never go. I love the quote, and I get this from a guy who founded Folds of Honor, Dan Rooney, F-16 pilot, PGA tour member. He said, go before you're ready. Go before you're ready, and you'll figure it out along the way. And you may need to take two steps back to take a pause and put more foundation in place, but just go before you're ready. And I think that holds true. The intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation, I think you hit it. I've seen so many people, and I'm thankful for my life. Like you said something in the book about getting over regrets from your earlier years of what I'm assuming is, I wish I had done this when I was younger. I didn't focus on money because I didn't follow the traditional sort of, hey, you graduate college, go get a profession, become the master of your craft. I got to deploy to war with some of the best guys, you know, one of them, Rich DeVinny, you know, eradicating what we thought was evil and purpose in traveling the world from Africa to Iraq to Afghanistan to Yemen to other places. I consider myself blessed. And now I've suffered with more of this cycle of sameness now that I'm in the traditional professional route.
When you talk about youth, right? I mean, just, you know, very quickly, the core of my book, in addition to the sort of science and reporting, is this journey that I go on in middle age to become a competitive athlete in the sport of obstacle course racing, right? Which is like Spartan racing, and it combines endurance running with hunter-gatherer military-style obstacles, climbing walls, climbing ropes, carrying heavy sandbags up and down mountains, you know, basic functional movements that we need for life. But again, as you said, like, I was an author and a writer and a journalist, and I'd followed what people praised me for, which was stringing together words. But I had never, as a kid, been complimented for anything physical. And so I think that that always stuck with me. You know, this notion of what does it feel like to be strong? What does it feel like to be in control of your body and to have it do what you want it to do in the moment? And I always probably was seeking that. And it wasn't until I had that moment at that dinner party and then the next morning woke up and Googled. I literally, Mike, Googled, and I still don't know why I did. What are the hardest things you can do? Like, why that would be the thing that came out of my brain to my hands. But I did, and the Google algorithm served up Spartan racing, you know, obstacle course racing. And I went down this rabbit hole of reading about it, and I thought, I could never do that. There's like no way I could ever do that. And that's when it clicked, like, that's the thing I have to do. And so now it went from my trying to get to just one race to now, I guess this past weekend, I just completed my 51st race. And, you know, I've made it to the point where I've raced in two world championships and I've been on the podium for my age group. But again, as you said, none of that matters. It matters, right? Because they're benchmarks, but this journey, it's the every day that I have been outside just, you know, grinding it out, holding myself accountable when there was no one else to really hold me accountable. That is what has led to the fact and to this point right here where you and I are talking.
I love how you just said benchmarks. I'm going to take some literary plagiarism and take that from you. That's absolutely spot on. They are metrics to maybe evaluate where you're on in the journey. First off, the reason when you Google that and that came up was that Joe DeSena paid a lot of money for SEO optimization and good on him for that. But no, you know, there's an opportunity cost for whatever you do. And I think that's where the regrets come from. To become an internationally acclaimed and award-winning writer, you had a sacrifice.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get 3-pound packs of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $2.99 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The things that others were doing in their 20s and 30s. But you've got to reconcile that at some point, and you can't change the past and just move forward. And You did that. I'm interested in this competency track because I haven't picked up the book yet. That's going to happen. In fact, I'm going to get one for my wife as well. But explain what competency track is, because I think I may be mystifying that.
Yeah, well, it's actually TRAP, T-R-A-P, not track. But I think, you know, I like what you say about track because I think it works as well. We get into a rut, a track of following what we're good at, our competencies, right? And the older we get, the more we continue to do that. And the business world rewards us for that, right? We are, we live on short-term metrics and KPIs, and our bonuses are based on that and hitting them. And so we lean in over and over to what we're good at and start to shy away from what we're not. That's what I think of as the competency trap, that we are trapped in this, as I said, this inertia of just doing what we're good at. And I think both in business, relationships, just your own life overall as a person, I think it's very unhealthy, right? I think that it makes you shy away from things that could bring you joy and breadth. And again, I think putting yourself out there and doing things that make you deeply uncomfortable is so important. Another author who's become a friend of mine named Michael Easter wrote a book called The Comfort Crisis. And that book is spot on about us being caught in this trap again of just leaning into what is comfortable. You know, what you have done in your career is not comfortable. Obstacle course racing in itself is not a comfortable sport. You are very uncomfortable for whether it's 45 minutes to 7 hours, depending on the length of the race and what you're doing. And in the moment, you may be like, why am I doing it? But you always know at the end. You know at the end why you did it. And so that is something I don't even know if I fully understood until I started and embraced this thing where I was not competent at all. I was not strong. I failed over and over again. You know, little kids would try and teach me monkey bars on the playgrounds while their parents watched, who are my age. So, you know, it was just a cycle of putting myself out there over and over again. So that's what that is about. And I do think what you said, my brain is chewing on it in the back while we're talking about the opportunity cost, is something worth doubling down on for a minute, because every time we do choose one thing, we're not choosing another. It's important though, because otherwise you're just going in little directions a little bit all the way, but you're not getting anywhere with everything. You're just a little bit of energy here, there, there. And I think you have to figure out what's truly essential in your life. There's a book out there that's great called Essentialism that's about this. And I think for me, it was figuring out what are the important things that I am going to lean into. I know there's a cost to that. I can't have everything all the time, but now I do have something new, right? I was able to make room for this in my life. And so, I think you have to come to be okay to some degree with that opportunity cost.
People try to do too many things. And if you try to do too many things, we in the military, excuse my language, we say two things shitty, one thing well. And I recently heard Jordan Peterson, he came and spoke in Austin. He said, you've got to be laser focused on that one thing, on that one thing. And that can change throughout your life. For me, because I was surrounded by such talented operators, guys like Rich DeVinny, I had to go all in that one profession and focus on only that and nothing else. And sometimes that robbed my kids of being a good father, because I would go in to my command during the weekends to get ahead on work or to work on certain things. And it was a point of pride, but you've got, you know, if you're trying too many things, oh, I want to go climb Everest and I want to learn the guitar and I want to, you're going to end up doing everything. I think we say half-assed or mediocre. So I am with that, but focus on Everest, climb Everest, and then move to the next thing and laser focus on that and put all your efforts into it. The competency trap, you hit it as you were starting to talk about that and you finally said it, it's comfortable. It's the comfortable place to be. Is once you identify your strengths, and I know there's strength-based assessments or strength-based outcomes, you get comfortable with that. And you know, there's a lot of good books out there. The one about Roger Federer, who tried so many different sports growing up before he finally, and he was good at all of them, but finally chose tennis as his sport and went all in. But I think the more you expose yourself, especially as a child, but even as an adult, you create a breadth of experience that makes you stronger in the end. You know, there's much we can learn from art, even as a SEAL. There's much we can learn from the business world as a SEAL. There's much we can learn from musicians and those that run the entertainment industry as a SEAL. And we constantly always had those discussions with leaders. We call them disruptive workshops to dive into their industry and see if there was that one or two nuggets of best practices or approaches to running organizations or becoming masters of the craft that we tried to adopt and bring into our command. And Rich was in some of those conversations.
You've mentioned Rich a couple of times. I mean, what you're talking about right now, Mike, is core. You know, when I read his book, The Attributes, and I really learned and came to understand what the difference is between attributes and skills, that was a turning point for me in my own journey to become an obstacle course racer, because I realized, like, there were advantages I had. I didn't have to be the fastest necessarily or the strongest. I could lean on other things that I had, other attributes such as grit and determination, right? Patience. Those all became like my secret weapons, you know, even as I aged, to master this sport and to equalize the playing field for me. And you know, that was very clarifying. And I know he developed that when he was with the Navy SEALs. And so I think there's just a lot of lessons, and this is why the messages that you speak about are so resonant with everybody. But there's so many lessons from what you have done in your career there that we can all, even if we never are going to serve as a Navy SEAL, can carry into our daily lives. And I was able to do that and understand what attributes could do for me, and other people can too.
And Wendy, those attributes were formed through 30 years in the industry in becoming a master of your craft. I think where people fail is the translation and the application to other things.
Yes.
And that has been, you know, the military taught me everything I needed about leadership, leadership development, culture, and high-performing teams. Now, it's on the veteran when they get out, if they want to start a business, to take those attributes and all those lessons and those principles and characteristics and now translate it to a different, slightly different environment. I still think business is like war, hopefully by nonviolent means, but people struggle with the application of what they've learned through life.
Yeah, I agree. I think most people, though, they don't always make the connection that their attributes can transfer to something else. And I think that is a really important takeaway for me. It's part of why I do think people get frozen in midlife, because they aren't sure, like, they're so defined by being one thing, and they don't see that what made them, as you're alluding to, good at that one thing can also make them good at something else and to carry. So I think kind of unlocking that is super important to kind of combating this. I think of it as a midlife assassin, right? I think of this assassin in the rafters of the concert hall of our life, just waiting to take aim at us the minute that we fall into this trap of inertia. And then it's like, yeah, the assassin's like ready to get you, but this is how you fight back.
Love it.
Somebody else loves it too.
Yes, that is our guard dog. So I want to finish with this. We live in a world where everyone is trying to sell you the quick fix, which you and I refer to as the hacks.
Yeah.
And it is attractive. It is attractive. You know, I always use weight loss. That, hey, take these pills and you'll lose 50, or a Zipic, which is a shortcut. There is tools, it does have value, but take this rather than learning the habits and routines that set you up for life. So you talked about hacks don't cut it. I'd love to hear your perspective on what we talk about so much here at the Everyday Warrior.
Well, look, I'm a journalist by training, so let's just look at the data, right? People are consuming shortcuts and hacks to find good health and happiness. And the data shows it's not working in this country. Both are on the decline in America. The latest World Happiness Report that came out showed America dropped out of the top 20 for the first time, right? We have worse health outcomes than many other countries of our same economic status. This shows up again and again and again. And so I think the evidence is there that these shortcuts are not the way to combat this, right? And so it really, I do deeply believe, and I have come to believe through not only my own story, but talking to other scientists and longevity experts and doctors and elite athletes and military leaders like yourself, that going down the long, hard road of mastering something new, having a reason to get up every morning, something new to learn or to unlearn, right, is a far better path than just a quick fix, a pill, an app, anything, right? It is all of that will become an infrastructure in your life that will change everything else. And so I don't know that I would have known that until I had embarked on this process myself, right? You can read other people talk about it, but this is why I encourage other people to really find something they love, something that pushes them to dig in and to stick with it.
The long road, as we say, hard decisions lead to an easy life. Easy decisions lead to a hard life. It is the hardest thing for anyone, I think, especially in today's age, because we move fast, especially in the business world, society as a whole, with the advent of technology, things move at a faster rate than the 50s, 60s, 70s. And that's, I think, objectively true, is success doesn't come overnight. And I think we've lost that as a whole. And especially with social media, which is, it's almost like comparison is the thief of joy. People don't see the journey that these people had to endure to reach a certain level of success. And people are no longer willing to put, for what it is, the amount of work that's required, or maybe they don't realize the amount of work that's required, and they don't have a methodology to take that slow, long road that developed those habits and routines, that, like becoming an award-winning journalist after 30 years of in the trenches, can apply, and a lot applies, to obstacle course racing.
Yeah, I agree. I had a kid, my neighbor's kid, knocked on my door the other day, and I looked at him, I was like, yes? He said, I wanted to know if you wanted me to do any work around your house. Do you want me to mow the lawn or do weeds or wash your car? I looked at him because I haven't seen a kid that age get off their phones or their computers and want to do the work, like hard work to earn money, in so long. My mouth just sort of dropped. And I think about, like, from a young age, we need to still teach the value of hard work, not just for money, but for, again, satisfaction. And so, yes, it starts then, and then we have to keep doing this and holding ourselves accountable and deciding these things are non-negotiable in my life every day. I am going to wake up and do these things. It's not negotiable, and these are the things that are going to get me to a better place. So I couldn't agree with you more, Mike.
And if you fail to do those things on one day, it does not mean you're a failure, or it's not an indictment of your character. It means life happened, but you get back on track the next morning.
Totally.
I hate to go to the SEAL analogy, but this was the beauty of what Admiral William McRaven wrote about in Make Your Bed, is that no matter what happened during that day, you came back to a made bed and the day restarted. But, as you talk about the next generation, which is always the next best generation, we had an advantage, and this was just society. I mean, you grew up in North Carolina, Tar Heels. You probably were kicked out of the house at 8 a.m. and didn't come back into 6 p.m., which means you were out getting in trouble, riding around bikes, doing what young boys and girls do, kick the can. It was a different time, but it also led to seeing what's out there in the world rather than what's 1 foot in front of you with your screen of your phone or your iPad. We do need to encourage more of that. We do need to get kids involved out of the house. I agree with you. That is a much longer conversation. Wendy, anything else you want to say about the book for the readers to pick this up, which I think, guys, I have a lot of authors on here. And all, New York Times bestselling authors and great authors, great subjects. But this one is needed. This no one is needed. But Wendy, let me pass the floor off to you.
I appreciate that. What I would say for people, and I'd love to hear from people. I mean, I write back. I want to hear from people once they read it. And you can, I'm pretty easy to find online, but GwendolynBounds.com is my website. But what I want to hear what people are struggling with, right? Like, what is your barrier? What is your wall? And there are chapters in the book that are divided up to explain very quickly the different obstacles that you'll find on the course. These are like mini chapters, and they're metaphors for the obstacles that we face in life, right? And so I think there's a lot to be learned from how we overcome those. And I would like to hear from people on how they are overcoming the obstacles to pursue something new and challenging in their own life, or where they're stuck, right? Wow. And so I think I want to end with saying and underscoring something that you said and going back to something that I said. You know, one, you were saying, like, if you don't get it done one day, don't quit, right? And I think that is so important. Like, there are moments when I have not been able to hit every mark I wanted to hit in my training. And instead of getting myself into a funk the next day and just saying, ugh, you know, what's the point? Like, you just get back at it the next day. So I think that is really important to underscore. And I also, again, want to say about being okay looking foolish, right? You know, you talked about jumping out of the plane, and I talked about writhing around in my yard here, looking like a wounded animal early in the morning, doing bear crawls. Just be all right with that. Like, nobody cares. You know, we live in this world of Instagram where we think everything has to be so perfect. Trust me, like, people's lives aren't perfect. I just did a race at Citi Field last weekend, and I had a film crew from NBC with me there, and I'm just like pouring sweat, and I'm on monkey bars. I'm like, you know, praying to God I don't fall off on the camera. And I know I looked funny, right? I know I looked silly at some points, particularly when I missed my spear and had to do a bunch of burpees, but that's all right, right? Like, that's just life, and just keep going. So I think I'd like to end on that. And I'm so appreciative for what you do and all the great messages you put into the world and what you have accomplished with this last journey that you did. I've followed it before we even met today. I don't know what it takes to do that, but I do know what it takes to stick with something where you think you have a high potential of failure at your fingertips. And so, you know, congratulations to you for what you've done.
Thank you. And yeah, I had one thing underlined. If you didn't bring it up, I was going to be okay with looking like a fool. And what it took to do 777? A foolish notion that we could prove everyone wrong. And that's what it started with, even though a lot of people tried to talk us out of it. But, you know, for the viewers, guys, listen, go pick up this book, Not Too Late, The Power of Pushing Limits at Any Age. If you're in your 40s, 50s, or 60s, this book could not be more prevalent. But more importantly, if you're in your 20s and 30s, learn this before you end up mid-age in life. Because if you understand this, then you won't have to deal with a dilemma that Wendy and I have ended up in. So, you know, it's books like this, which I call self-leadership, not self-help. It's self-leadership, self-improvement. And Wendy, I can't thank you enough for buying this. It could not be more timely. And guys, go pick it up at Amazon. You can also find it at GwendolynBounds.com, and we'll drop her webpage in the copyright. But it's a number one bestseller in sports training and in a few other categories on Amazon. It's doing extremely well for a reason. Wendy, I can't thank you enough for your time, and congrats on the book.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mike. It was a great 30, 45 minutes, whatever it was. It went by fast. I enjoyed it.
Perfect. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Out here.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.